Welcome to this online interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our very special guest of honor today is Mr. Radek Mali. He's the president of Highland Project Logistics and also Highland Forwarding, based in Boston, USA. First and foremost, Radek, very welcome to this interview.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to be here.
Likewise, good to have you. Radek, I always allow my interviewees in all of my interviews as such to elaborate a little bit on their background. How come you got into forwarding in the first place? Why are you not working in the government or an accountant or sitting in a bank? Why are you in forwarding?
So I ended up in freight forwarding actually quite early in my career. I majored in export-import business and university in Prague, Czech Republic. I was born originally in Prague, grew up there, went to school. And that was actually my chosen field from the year of, from the age of 18, I chose export-import trade as my career. So maybe I'm one of the lucky ones who maybe knew at the beginning what was my calling. And when I came to the United States at the age of 23, 24, I continued in the business, first working for a bank for a year, doing letters of credit, which gave me a good, actually, very boring job, honestly. Yeah. But it gave me a good overview of what's going on in the international business. And that was the first time I actually got introduced to the freight forwarding business, because all the freight forwarders were sending letters of credit to the banks.
That's it.
And then a year later, I got hired by Panalpina in Atlanta.
Wow.
I spent four years there, and then I went to a company called Dan Transport, which became DSV.
The Danish
which
company.
Became DSV Panalpina later. So those two employers I had actually got married in the end.
Right.
But it was very attractive to me, and exciting business. Always you have to stay on your toes. And then in 1998, I decided to start my own business, Highland Forwarding.
Okay.
And that's 28 years ago, and we're still here, growing, and
fantastic.
In the same field my whole life.
Yeah, no, but that's fantastic. So I wasn't totally wrong when I asked about bank that you kind of got into it because of that. Yes. That's interesting, and I guess once you have your own company and it goes well, you never look back. I mean, how can you work for other people when you run your own, right?
That's right.
So
that's right. We can decide our own destiny and how to do business and how to really take care of the clients and how to be different, you know, in today's field, because we're competing obviously against all the big guys. So the only thing we have is the service and the people we have.
Yeah.
So that's what we have to nourish and develop.
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, there's a trend recently that some of the shipping lines, they like to buy forwarding companies and they cut out the forwarder. Do you see the same problem in the US? I mean, do you have also shipping lines there who want to act as forwarders too? What's your opinion?
Yeah, always. I mean, this trend started many, many years ago, you know, 10, 20 years ago, but all the big shipping lines want to get into the forwarding business. Then when the trouble starts, like during COVID, the pandemic, they suddenly wanted to get out of the business of trucking because they saw, oh, we cannot get any drivers. So let's push all the problems back to the forwarders. Now they're back in the business of trucking, but the service really is horrible. So the customer just has to experience it once that the shipping line will not give them the same service and find the solutions. And it's very easy to compete with the big guys on service.
Yeah.
So the service has to make up for the difference in the price, maybe sometimes, you know, because they have the larger volume. So they can undercut you by $50, $100, but in the end, it's not worth it.
No. I fully understand. And it's, of course, as a forwarder, we must also improve our game. But I believe, too, that freight forwarders serve a vital role. You can ask different lines. You're not linked to only one. How tell us about the company that you are running. How do you find your customers? It's and you, I since you have two companies within the company, so to speak, Highland Project and Highland Forwarding. Tell our viewers a little bit about both.
Okay, so first, we started Highland Forwarding in 1998 as a general cargo forwarding business, air freight, ocean freight, import, export, and then later we started handling more and more project business, flat tracks, oversized cargo, big, large projects in Russia, Kazakhstan, different countries, and we saw that it's important to have an entity that really is dedicated to the project business. So we decided to start a separate company for marketing reasons, for legal reasons, liability reasons, and just to have a focus on the project business. So we're running both companies side by side, and each has a separate set of clients, but we're doing well on both fronts, and it's been going well.
Okay, that's good to hear. You work with then, of course, other freight forwarders overseas. Are you part of some networks of freight forwarders nowadays, or how do you find your, let's say, your counterpart in Kazakhstan, for example?
Yeah, good question. So interestingly, when I started Highland, I had no idea about networks of agents. We just had our US clients, and we were doing our own business. And I was looking for agents on online, different websites. We always had to explain who are we, who are you. It was a very difficult process. And then maybe in 2003, we joined our first network, a small network of general forwarding agents. It's called IFLN, and we're still a member after 25 years. Later on, we joined a network for project cargo business, which is GPLN.
Oh yeah, yes, I know them well.
It's a very good network, small size, maybe 250 members. Remember, we go to all the conferences. And then in the general forwarding business, we joined WCA later because everybody's in WCA, and
Yeah, that's true. Everybody.
it's like a phone book. It's everybody's there, and it gives you a good coverage in all the countries that you can think of. But so we pick and choose, the relationships, and a lot of the people are in multiple networks too. So.
No, but that's clear. It's networking nowadays. It's not what you know, it's who you know, and suddenly you need a guy here, a guy there. How can you meet everybody if you're not part of a network? And it also
That's right.
makes you stronger to compete with the Kuehne Nagels of the world with 200 offices, right?
Exactly. But honestly, we look at the networks and the conferences more as an introduction, and then really the business is done from our point of view in personal meetings when we go and actually visit the customer later. So I prefer personally to make trips to the countries where we do a lot of business and visit the customers in person and over lunch, and then your meeting can be 2, 3, 4 hours instead of 15 minutes running
Yeah,
from one
of course.
to a hall to another.
Of
So
course.
it's a necessary part of the process, but it's I look at it as an introduction.
No, I luckily, as smart as for example, our online meeting is today, as smart as it is, it'll never replace the real thing, meeting face to face. I mean, it's
I agree.
I think that the money spent on those trips and lunches and whatnot, you will gain back again.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's still a people's business, as much as they try to make it into a computer-generated algorithm, it will always be a people's business.
How do you feel? You alluded a little bit to it regarding the service from the shipping lines. We all know that they earned way too much during the corona times, and some of them became very arrogant. They treat you like trash, basically. And we know that the shipping lines, once they invite you for lunch, then you know that they are hungry again. How do you feel the service level from the ship owners? Do you find some shipping lines that give you proper service, or is it overall deteriorating, what you say?
It's honestly, I don't remember having been invited to lunch by a shipping line in a long time.
Okay.
That was maybe like 20 years ago.
Okay.
Especially the container lines,
Yeah.
because like Maersk, Hapag, everybody put all the people offshore. Everybody's working from India, China, other countries.
Yes.
It's very unusual to actually find a person in the United States who can answer a phone and do something for you.
That's
It
incredible.
is different with the break bulk carriers, with the ro-ro carriers. The project shipping guys are still here in person, and they come here. Actually, we have a visit this week from one of the carriers, and you can talk in person, and they're hungry for the business. The container lines, it's tough. It's tough really to get anything done.
No, it's the same song I hear as well, that it's basically some of the people sitting at the container lines might as well work in a bank and not in a shipping company, because they only see the screen. They don't know what is fore and aft on a vessel. They've probably never been to a container terminal either.
And you send emails to a US customer service at 10 in the morning, and you get the answer at three after midnight. So you see the person is not in the US replying, it's somebody overseas. So if you need a quick answer, you can expect it in 24 hours.
No, it's all that's also one thing I don't understand. With the billions they made in profits, that they can't reserve just 1 billion for customer service. I mean, why is that so difficult? Why must everything be outsourced? It's
Probably not.
beyond me. No, but how do you go about? You mentioned you do project cargo, and we are project cargo weekly. How do you do inland transportation? You charter the vessel. You do the door to door with your selected partners.
Correct, we do. So we handle both imports and exports, and honestly, there are more import shipments to the United States than exports. Also on the project side, on the container side, there's five containers coming as imports for one container that goes out as export. So it's 80% and 20% mix. It is also more usual to see import project shipments than export. There's a lot of machinery coming in, and there's actually a lot of construction right now, new plants. So a lot of cargo coming in. US unfortunately doesn't make too much stuff anymore, but whatever there is, we do a lot of oil and gas business from Texas, both to Africa, to the Caribbean, to used to go to Russia, but Kazakhstan's quite active, Uzbekistan.
Interesting. Interesting. I mean, the stance of the world, that's kind of the stance, and Africa are probably the last, let's say, undeveloped areas, so to speak, for logistics.
But to I didn't answer your whole question. So we arrange the inland freight transportation in the US. We have hundreds of carriers for any size cargo in all the ports. We handle all the ports in the US, from starting from New York down the East Coast into the Gulf, West Coast, also in Canada. Edmonton area has a lot of oil and gas business. A lot of the Canadian cargo actually comes through the US because the ports for break bulk are in the US, like Houston, Baltimore. And then we arrange coordination with the ports, crane, flat track loading, ship chartering, and ocean shipping, and then the door delivery overseas through our partners if that's what's needed.
Understand. I mean, I've heard some horror stories before about freight forwarders that got in the slammer because of choosing the wrong inland haulier in the States. There are some pitfalls there. You really need good connections. You need good relationships for trucking in the States too. Can you explain a little bit why is it that it can be complicated in the state? Is it rules and regulations, or I just hear that there are many forwarders who have
It's a difficult process in the US because you have 50 different states, and each state has different regulations and different sets of permits. So sometimes when you go from, say, Baltimore to the Midwest, to Kansas or somewhere Wyoming or Chicago, you're crossing four or five different states or more. For each state, you need a set of permit, and each state has a different set of regulations. And then you're crossing different cities. So just to get out of the city of Baltimore, for example, you need a set of permits from the city. Then you need permits to cross bridges. You need to do engineering studies how to cross bridges. So it can get very complicated. Some permits can take 3 months. We've had a case of 6 months waiting for permits
Really?
for a move.
That's
So it is
unbelievable.
important just not to ship cargo on a vessel and say, oh, we'll figure it out when it gets there, because it may sit in the port for 6 months and incurring storage. But there's a the other issue is on the height for cargo that's really over height. You're looking at removing traffic lights, and doing a survey along the whole route, and you may not get the whole route planned out because you may think you go this way, and then halfway down they will stop you, and you cannot continue. So you have to start from scratch and do the routing all over again. Again, we had a shipment, and we were studying like for 3 months, running I think 15 different routes before we finally figured out how to get from A to B.
That's and I thought Germany was bad regarding permissions and whatnot.
So I mean, this is a big country,
Yeah,
because
of course.
and it's we have a lot of ports, but if you're going somewhere in the north, it will be a long transit time.
So as a rule of thumb, I guess finding the port that is closest to the final destination is, I guess, more or less the best way.
Closest or easiest? The closest may not always be the easiest. Like going through, for example, going through California is very difficult because of their permitting process. So some destinations, like places in Arizona that have a lot of construction right now, they may be easier actually to access from Houston, even though the distance may be double. You're not going through California. Getting permits in Texas is a lot easier than California.
More business mind. I can hear that you really know your business regarding inland in the States. I think a lot of our viewers may contact you after this.
Yeah, the important thing is to not have a preconceived idea looking at the map. Oh, to go to Chicago, this is the best port. I always tell people, ask us, tell us where's the final destination. We will suggest solutions, how to get there, and what are the pitfalls, and what we should be looking at based on the dimensions and the weight and the deadlines and so on.
No, I can certainly hear that you know your business, and that's what a true freight forwarder can do for the customer. Think of different solution, different ways, and not be stuck in one alley, so to speak. And I believe with the ro-ro carriers and break bulk carriers, you have also good relationships, and you mentioned that they are more eager for business nowadays, I guess.
Absolutely, absolutely. It comes and goes. Yeah, sometimes they're silent, and it seems like they have a lot of cargo. And right now, I think we see quite a bit of interest, and to close the deals that we're quoting on.
One practical question. Do you see, is most of the cargo that you control, is it controlled, let's say, in the States, or is it FOB or CNF, or how who controls the freight, so to speak? Do you also handle for other forwarders to the
Right,
States?
we see actually that most of the cargo is controlled overseas. Not all, but on the import side to the US, it seems like the US companies just want to buy everything DDP, bring it to me, I don't want to do anything. So the
Easy.
people, say in Europe or in Asia, would control all the shipping to set it up in the plant and pay the duties, and that's it. Likewise, on the export side from the US, a lot of the cargo is controlled overseas by the buyer, because the buyer wants to be in control. That's the difference in the mentality, what I see. But one pitfall with sending shipments to the USA now is the tariffs, obviously, because we're a customs broker also, so we do clearances.
Interesting.
And it seems like I'm spending half of my time advising people on tariffs since last April, because it's ever changing and it's very confusing. Even if you do it as a full-time job, it's confusing to the customs brokers as well. So Really, it's part of the whole shipping process, and to do it correctly, because that can kill a deal, if the customs declarations are not done correctly.
Definitely. Now I've heard some cases now with I'm from Denmark, and some very big wind turbine projects, then they are halted by presidential order, no more. Now they
Right.
go to court, then they start again, and customs, and yeah, it's a murky area, and you really need to be careful not to, let's say, get in trouble, I suppose.
And also, trying to save customers on the duty by finding the correct tariff. We have 50% duties on steel and aluminum, and every country has a reciprocal tariff. From Europe at 15%, but other countries have 20, 30%, 25, plus the original duty. So there's a lot of exceptions, a lot of rules, and it's changing every week. So it's
I can imagine. Do you see,
funny.
the final questions here, do you see any specific overseas market that is growing a lot compared to what you see trading wise? Is India growing? Is Africa? Where do you see the most, shall we say, movements for your business?
We see actually interesting that you mentioned India. India for us is growing quite a lot. It's one of our focus areas, and both export and import actually. It seems to be maybe replacing China a little bit as a country that sends cargo to the US. And it's the tariffs actually have just fallen from 50% India to the US to only 18. But it's a big difference. And yes, I see big future for India in the coming years and decades, hopefully.
Interesting to hear, and that's also what I hear from other interviewees. Finally, here, my question to you is, we just started the 2026, and if you look into your crystal ball, what do you see for you business-wise?
I see a good year. I think things are settling down. Last year was a bit unsettled with the tariffs, and a lot of shipments were put on hold because people or companies didn't know what to expect. Now it's a little bit more stable. It's not a good situation. The duties are high, but at least companies know what to expect. So we are looking at some increased activity. And also, I have a big hope. I'm not sure if it's this year or in 2 years or 5 years, but the reconstruction of Ukraine will be huge business,
That will be
especially
huge.
for US companies.
Definitely. Oh, yes, they will be.
So we are preparing for that situation.
Yes. I think that sounds like a very clever move, because something's going to give at that place. They cannot keep on forever. But who knows? Politics and business, either they are together or they're far apart. Let's hope for the best in the end.
Let's hope so. And there will be a lot of shipments, a lot of construction going on there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Radek, I want to say many, many thanks to you for a most interesting interview, and appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. It was a pleasure.
Same here. And to all our listeners, viewers, and readers from around the world, this was yet another great interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our special guest of honor today has been Mr. Radek Mali, the president of Highland Project Logistics and Highland Forwarding, based in Boston, USA. And I'm quite sure that he would be very helpful if you have any shipments to or from the US and overseas. A proper freight forwarder with good customer service that is not outsourced to a foreign country. So do contact him. From me at Project Cargo Weekly, until next time, I remain best regards. Thank you.